Doug, we'll get back to orca killer whales and talk of people
and
in
other
cages.
Sports talk.
But we're going to transition not very seamlessly.
Right.
We're going to talk about presidents and drinking. We've got Mark Will Weber, the author of Drinking with Republicans and also Drinking with Democrats, plus pretty much overall, he's just a presidential drinking expert. And he joins us right now on the Appliance Discounter phone lines. Good morning, Mark. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing out there?
We're doing real well. Obviously, with this election cycle, we're always talking a little politics, even though our show is kind of a sports show, but we like to talk about everything. So tell us about these books. And I'm guessing with so much discussion about Hillary and Trump, I'm guessing people are wondering about what you've written about with drinking with Republicans and drinking with Democrats.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk that we're going to all need a good stiff drink or two to get through this election, as you might imagine, on either side. My own personal prejudices are that, I don't care too much about his policies, but Trump doesn't drink. So that's bad for my book because, I want to update it each cycle here. So it's kind of interesting. Trump doesn't drink, but we might remember Trump vodka, which he foisted on the drinking public a few years back and claimed in typical fashion it was going to be better than Grey Goose, and it's now in the recycling bin of Alco history. So Hillary likes to, will do a shot and a beer now and then out in Indiana in 2008 when she ran against Obama. She was out there drinking Boilermakers with some steel workers and a place called Broncos Lounge. So
anything for a vote.
Yeah, hey, you got to do what you got to do.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead,
guys.
Oh, I was just going to say, is there any way to know what they drink like beyond the public eye? Like, what does Hillary like to have when she's just hanging out at the New York manse and checking her basement email server?
They're pretty open about what they drink these days. Maybe not the amount. With the early presidents that I did, it's right there in their letters and their memoirs and stuff. And, for instance, we can trace exactly when George Washington decided to go into the whiskey business, and it became one of his most profitable items at the Mount Vernon plantation. So we have a letter where he's writing to a friend going, "Mr. Anderson," who was a Scottish guy who knew how to make the stuff, "thinks I can find my account in it." And by that he meant make money. And so we're kind of surprised, I think, to find out that presidents sold whiskey, like Washington and Andrew Jackson did the same.
That is awesome.
And John Hancock was a big dealer of wine, wasn't he?
Exactly. And in fact, it's one of the reasons the revolution happened, because the guys that did have money, the merchants like Hancock, they were importing rum from Jamaica. And, of course, the Brits wanted to tax it. And so nobody should ever underestimate the role of alcohol in our early history. And in fact, I'm often asked, did all the presidents from the beginning drink? And the answer to that is it predates the country, and that when Washington first ran for the House of Burgesses, in other words, we were still a colony, we have a ledger of the booze that he bought to apply to voters with. And it worked. He got elected. So it really sort of predates our country.
So, Mark, tell us, which presidents were the biggest drunks over time?
Nice question.
The biggest drinker by far, he died of cirrhosis of the liver, was Franklin Pierce. Now, people don't know a lot about Pierce, but the guy, supposedly when he wasn't asked to run again for his party for a second term, he said there's nothing for ex-presidents to do but get drunk.
I like that.
So Pierce was a pounder. Guys that could drink a lot but not show it were Buchanan, who's the president, the only president from Pennsylvania, who was my state. And they said Buchanan could drink enormous amounts of alcohol and still appear sober. On the other side of that coin, U.S. Grant and Richard Nixon were guys that we would term lightweights. They'd have one or two drinks and they'd be tipsy. Nixon, if he had too much, would be drunk dialing, all kinds of nonsense. LBJ used to like to drive around his ranch and drink while he did it, which I thought was interesting. He sometimes would be going 75, 80 miles an hour around his ranch with some Cutty Sark scotch, which is sort of a bargain basement blend in a plastic cup. And if somebody complained he was going too fast, he'd hold his 10-gallon hat over to speedometer. Well, so LBJ's a character when you read about him.
Oh, yeah.
I do have a couple of sports-related things about presidents and drinking, if you guys, since you're mainly a sports channel.
Absolutely.
You know, like that.
Sure. Let's hear them.
This is one of my favorites. When Herbert Hoover was president, he goes to the World Series in Philadelphia. And, of course, we all know Philly fans are famous for being boo birds. But these guys I would call the beer birds, as I'll explain. Hoover goes there. It's in the midst of Prohibition. Nobody can drink. The Depression is killing everybody. Nobody has jobs. So he arrives, and they announce him at Shibe Park in Philly. The Athletics are playing the Cardinals, by the way, guys. Okay. And he gets a small round of applause, but nothing earth-shattering. And then a chant begins to sweep the stadium. We want beer. We want beer. And it gets louder and louder. And the same thing happens again in the seventh inning when he gets up to leave. They say the president is leaving the stadium, and this crescendo of we want beer chants sweeps the stadium. And poor Hoover even writes about it in his diary. He said, I left the Shibe Park with the chant of we want beer ringing in my ears. So there's a good presidential sports story for you.
Huh. And eventually they would get their beer.
Sure.
It took a while. Boy, I can't imagine. Right. Can you imagine a ballpark without beer now?
Hey, no, it'd be riots ahead of time, right?
Mark, did any of them, were they known for partying in the White House at all, like during their terms? I ask because I remember I had a history professor when I was in college, and he used to talk about Warren Harding being a White House party machine. Now, I don't know if that was true. I don't know where he got it.
Absolutely true. Yeah, that's absolutely true. A number of them partied in the White House. I'll tell you two quick ones. Since we brought up Harding, Harding actually was the germ of this book when I first got the idea. Harding would go golfing during Prohibition. Again, nobody's supposed to drink or transport alcohol. And he would stash a fifth of whiskey in his golf bag. He'd take a pop before he teed off. Every couple holes, he'd take another pop. By the back nine, he's all over the place. He can't hit anything. Almost never broke 100. But imagine the audacity of the guy.
Sounds like three guys you're talking to.
Yeah, they're telling everybody else not to drink, and he's out at Chevy Chase knocking down whiskey shots in between holes.
Yes.
But to get back to the White House, he would have huge card games on the second floor, poker games, and his first lady, the Duchess, they called her, Florence Harding, she would scurry around and freshen the drinks of the players. And if she didn't do it quickly enough, they'd say, hey, Duchess, you're sleeping on the job. Get over here and, you know, give me another rum and Coke or whatever. And so they would drink continually in the White House, again, during Prohibition. Harding once lost an entire set of White House china on a bet, a poker bet. So, yeah, he was a beaut. And Harding, but real
and
quick.
And he was a conservative Republican who favored Prohibition.
Well, yes, it's really interesting with Harding because he openly courted what they called the dry vote in the Midwest. He on the face of things, tried to make it look like he was anti-alcohol, and then behind the scenes, he was knocking it down faster than the average guy. So another great story of the White House and parties is Andrew Jackson. When Jackson got elected, he was sort of the first guy, allegedly the man of the people, so all these frontiersmen from Kentucky and Tennessee and the western parts of Virginia stormed into the Capitol and followed them back to the White House. And they led all these yahoos into the White House. Some of them had mud on their boots. Some of them were standing on tables. They were breaking stuff. They were kind of like a big unruly dog that wants to jump up on you with muddy paws. And Jackson gets trapped at the back of the White House. He actually had to climb out a window and spend the night over in Virginia. And the only way they got these guys out of the White House is they had these big buckets of orange whiskey punch, and they carried those suckers out onto the lawn, White House lawn, put them out there, and all the guys went out to drink it, and then they kind of locked the doors, and that was that.
Lincoln strikes me as a guy who wouldn't party much, wouldn't drink much, but at least he'd be honest about it.
Abe Lincoln is probably the president that drank the least, which is sort of interesting. You think during the Civil War he would have needed something to get him through that mess. But Lincoln has a great sense of humor about alcohol, and so a lot of his jokes involve alcohol. And he would mess with people. He'd sit down, they'd pour him wine at dinner, and he'd bring the glass of wine up to his lips, and people would be like, wow, the president's going to drink. And then he'd smile and put it back down. So he had a great sense of humor about it. He also worked in a whiskey still as a teenager, and his opponents sometimes would bring that up. Mr. Lincoln used to work in a whiskey still, and used to sell whiskey at your grocery. And Lincoln said, well, yes, but I've quit my side of the counter, and you are still one of its best customers. So he would say that to Stephen Douglas in the Douglas debate. So it is an interesting back and forth. But Lincoln, he recognized that people that drank too much maybe had a disease. He was one of the first guys that showed some empathy for over-drinking, that it wasn't just a character flaw.
And for a guy who spends as much time as he does on the golf course, I'm assuming Obama drinks every now and then?
Obama's very eclectic with his drinking. He, you know, they make beer at the White House, White House Honey Ale. They have their own recipe. They brought in some brewers to show them how to do it, some of these craft brewer guys. So they break it out for, like, Super Bowl special events like that. He likes red wine. He'll occasionally have a mixed drink. I'm told that he'll have, a late-night martini, but he's not over the top with it. And the Clinton was the same way, surprisingly. You would think Clinton in his memoirs is funny. He goes, for all my other flaws, I'm glad to say that alcohol isn't one of them. So, in Clinton's case, it was his stepfather was an alcoholic. So he used to have to sometimes separate the stepfather from trying to beat up his mother when he was drunk, the stepfather. So you can imagine that Clinton was a little leery about alcohol, having seen its worst side effects. And Reagan is the same way. Reagan was not a big drinker because his father had alcohol problems. But Reagan was a master of what I call the alcohol photo op. In other words, he would go to a Irish bar on St. Paddy's Day, and he'd get a big mug of Guinness. He'd get his picture taken hoisting the Guinness. He'd have two or three sips. He'd put it down. He'd order something lighter, like a Smittix, drink half of that and not finish it. But he knew that it was sort of a valuable way of showing not only that his Irish-American roots, but also that he was sort of one of the people, a working-class type guy.
And, Mark, I know your books are about presidents drinking, but in your research, found anything about any of these guys maybe with some cannabis or anything like that during their terms?
Well, I think the latter guys, they never own up to doing that during their terms, you know. No. A lot of them will pass that off as some sort of youthful indiscretion. You know, we get back to the famous Clinton line of, well, I didn't inhale. Mm-hmm. But as we know, whether you admire Bill Clinton or not, he was sort of loose on the definition of what was what, whether it was that or sex or whatever, you know.
Right.
So, no, to extent. But
Obama admitted to trying cocaine, correct?
Yes, and yeah. I mean, that's right there in his autobiography. You know, he's pretty open about that. George W. Bush is very open about his alcohol stuff, but less so about rumors about drugs when he was young. But if you read George W. Bush, I mean, he's very open about, again, another sports-related story where he was busted for DUI. He hit John Newcomb, the tennis player, was with him, and Newcomb was an Australian, and he was showing him how to drink beers without using your hands. But he was a lot better at it than George. And, you know, George, he, our only president that, or future president at the time, that was arrested at the Yale-Princeton game when they drug him off the crossbar of the goalpost. He was trying to tear down the goalpost, and they threw him in the squad car because he was inebriated.
There's your president. Hey, you know, Mark, I'm wondering, this has been years and years ago, but with the political conventions coming up, I'd read a book, I think it was P.J. O'Rourke, the guy from Rolling Stone,
sure,
talked about how Democrats were just wide open with their partying. They didn't hide it.
Right.
But he said Republicans partied just as much. They were just quiet about it, and they did it in more secrecy and in private quarters and stuff. Is that true? Was it true? Is it still true? Does one party tend to party more than the other party?
I think, honestly, I think it's it's probably fairly equal on both sides. Now, it may be the Republicans are a little more discreet about it and not letting, you know, any Yahoo off the street walk in and party with them. That could well be. I may test the theory. I might go up to Cleveland if I get brave enough. And and I live close to Philly, so I could get there easily. So I may test that out, you know. But, you know, this thing at conventions with the drinking goes way back. Again, almost at the beginning of the animal, because at the 1896 convention, Republican convention, which was in St. Louis, that's where you guys are from, right?
Yep.
Yes.
And they made the bartender in St. Louis came up with this great drink. It's one of my favorite drinks in the book, by the way, called McKinley's Delight. And this was in honor of President-to-be McKinley. It's a pretty powerful Manhattan with a little anisette floated in on top of it. So it's a tough drink. I like them, but I wouldn't have two or three and try to drive. So this tradition of even naming drinks at the conventions after their candidates occasionally happens too. So it's a fun time at conventions usually. I don't know if these are going to be from with all the tension and such in the country, but hopefully there'll be more partying and less brawling.
Well, Mark, really appreciate the time. Fun conversation. I think people on both sides, as you said, will be drinking heavily, whether it's Trump or Hillary come November.
Yeah, I think it's an absolute necessity.
Thanks a lot, Mark.